Good morning, everyone. I'm here to tell you about a wise and noble friend of China. There are many events happening this year here in China and in the UK in memory of a young Englishman who became a legend in war-torn China 80-odd years ago. This legend was portrayed in a 2008 Hollywood film called The Children of Huangshi. But there is so much more to his real story. My uncle George Aylwin Hogg, there he is at about your age, still at school, was born in Harpenden, England in 1915 and died only 30 years later of tetanus in Shandan, Gansu. He became a legendary national hero for what he achieved in just 7 action-packed years. He was the youngest of a family of 6 children. My mother was his elder sister. You can imagine how the family felt on receiving the news of George's tragic departure from this world, so young and so far from his home country. I was born about 6 months after George's untimely death, and in his memory I was given his middle name as my middle name, Aylwin. It is an ancient Celtic name which means wise friend or noble friend. It was by this name that he was called within the family circle rather than George. It turned out that this name was very appropriate, as he certainly became a wise and noble friend to the ordinary Chinese people. He had what you might call rather than a privileged upbringing in quite a prosperous family. His mother's sister was the world-renowned pacifist activist Muriel Lester, known as the Mother of World Peace. And so there was a strong pacifist, nonconformist influence in his upbringing. His early education was at home with a governess, employing Montessori principles, which is all about cultivating a well-rounded individual intellectually, physically, emotionally, and socially. He spent a year at the age of 10 at an international school in Switzerland, inspired by the pacifist organization, the International Fellowship of Reconciliation, which was also run on Montessori principles. And then he followed his brothers and sisters to St. George's School near his home in Harpenden. This was a very progressive school. In those days, co-educational schools where boys and girls were taught together were pretty well unheard of. He completed his education, like his 3 brothers before him, by going to Wadham College, Oxford, where he studied philosophy, politics, and economics. He's described in Wikipedia and elsewhere as an adventurer. Well, indeed, in his long summer university vacations, he would hitchhike throughout the early 1930s Europe with just a few pounds in his pocket. After graduation from Oxford, a chance for more adventure presented itself. Aunt Muriel was planning yet another of her world lecturing tours on pacifism for the Fellowship of Reconciliation. She was overjoyed by the prospect of her charming young nephew accompanying her on her travels, and so in 1937, they set off across the Atlantic Ocean to New York. While Muriel preached pacifism to various interest groups and heads of government, George hitchhiked all over the USA, meeting all sorts of folk. And while in Mississippi, he spent some time studying a cooperative farm set up to help poor farmers make a better living. He found it most inspiring. In due course, George and Muriel met up in San Francisco to continue their world tour, and on Christmas Day, 1937, they arrived in Japan. While Muriel preached to Christian and pacifist groups, George studied the work of Dr. Kagawa, who was the founder of the cooperative movement throughout Japan, started some 20 years earlier. It was Dr. Kagawa's work that had inspired the project in Mississippi. George decided to stay for a while in Japan to get to know the people and the cooperatives. At that time, the Japanese people were beginning to get some idea that the official propaganda about what the Japanese military was doing in China, apparently for the good of the Chinese people, was clearly a pack of lies. George was asked by his Japanese friends to find out what was really going on, and in due course to tell them the real story. So, in mid-February 1938, George set off for Shanghai. This was just 2 months after the horrific incidents in Shanghai and Nanjing at the height of the Japanese wanton brutality in China. He made his way to the then wartime capital, Hankou, where he found a job as a journalist with United Press International. This provided credentials allowing him to travel widely and investigate. He had seen the horrors for himself in Shanghai, then met journalists in Hankou who had been in Nanjing and seen the terror. He visited the communist stronghold, Yan'an, where he met with Zhou Enlai and the 8th Route Army generals, Chu De and Nie Ranzhen. They urged George to report to the world, telling of the true war situation. In Hankou, he came across the newly formed Chinese Industrial Cooperatives, the CIC. A New Zealander and China veteran, Rui Ali, had set up the organization's headquarters in Hankou, and George was the first Western journalist to visit there for a story in August 1938. George was fascinated in the light of his own experiences in studying the co-ops in the USA and Japan. That was something to think about. But in October 1938, with the Japanese advance on Hankou, many foreign journalists were expelled. So George left for Japan, where he fulfilled his promise, reporting back to his friends there. However, he secretly made his way back to Beijing via Japanese occupied Korea and Manchuria. With help from some students, he was smuggled out of the city into the surrounding countryside, where he met up with guerrilla forces, the supreme commander of which he had met when he made his trip as a journalist to Yan'an. He travelled widely with General Nie Ranzhen's guerrillas for several months, and then in October 1939, George finally met up with Rui Ali in Baoji, which had become the most dynamic centre for the CIC. He took up the task of publicity man for the whole organisation, and in that capacity he was indeed able to travel widely, collecting colourful stories and writing extensively for the Western press raising awareness and financial support for the CIC. In time, they developed the idea for a series of technical training schools, and George was instrumental in setting these up. There were some successes and some failures. The aim of the schools, which evolved into the Bailey Vocational Schools, was to educate the younger generation in English, technical subjects, cooperative principles, and basic business acumen. These young people were to become the future leaders, able to liaise with foreign technical experts, easing cultural differences and the language barriers. In due course, he took over the running of the school in Xuanshipu, close to Baoqi. There he adopted four boys, the Nie brothers, all sons of a good friend who was somewhere out there in the war. No one really knew where. Their mother had recently died of some wasting disease in Baoqi. Was it tuberculosis or maybe cancer? Over the next few years, the school grew, and under George's strong influence, it began to form its own very special identity. His style of teaching and instruction was strongly influenced by those same Montessori principles familiar from his own childhood. The school grew from strength to strength, but by the autumn of 1944, the Japanese invasion was creeping closer. The school occupied a position high on a hillside overlooking a major road junction of three routes to the south, the east, and to the west. The nationalists were determined to take over that strategic position. So it seemed it was time to move. Zhou Enlai advised them to move westward rather than to the north, and Rui found a likely location in the ancient oasis town of Shandan out along the Silk Road. It meant that the 60 students and staff, along with 20 tons of essential machinery and other equipment, should make a journey of roughly 1,000 kilometres over two mountain passes during what was to be the most severe winter in living memory. With a fleet of carts hauled by mules, they set off in late November 1944 on their legendary journey, which became known as their Little Long March. On foot with those carts, it took some weeks to reach Lanzhou, which is approximately the halfway point. A small fleet of dilapidated trucks was luckily made available to them in Lanzhou to complete the perilous journey to Shandan in just four more days. During that autumn, Rui Ali was in Chongqing, tending to major crises within the CIC organization. So preparations for and the execution of the Little Long March fell largely upon George's shoulders. The school was to be located within disused Buddhist temples in Shandan. During the winter and spring of 1945, Rui was still in Chongqing fighting for the CIC's very survival. Consequently, the massive work setting up the school in the new location further fell upon George's broad shoulders. He worked passionately, long and hard through that winter and springtime, driving himself relentlessly, and by the summer, things were beginning to be in quite good shape. Basketball had become a hugely popular form of exercise in Xuanshipu, and so was a firm requirement in Shandan also. George loved to join in, and matches between pupils and staff were frequent and popular. And in July, 1945 while playing basketball with the boys, George injured his foot, stubbing his toe and breaking the skin. The temples had in recent years been used as stables for the horses of a local warlord, and so the surrounding ground had been heavily infested by the tetanus bacterium. His wounded toe became infected, and tetanus took hold. He had survived serious illnesses while in China, paratyphoid after his evacuation from Hankou, and then typhus soon after leaving Beijing following his return from Japan. Also anthrax, and malaria had become a regular visitor. His strong constitution had always somehow pulled him through. Surely he would somehow pull through this time also. Tetanus serum was missing from their medical supplies. Shortly after Rui Ali's return from Chongqing, and just hours prior to the arrival of serum in a dash from afar, George finally succumbed, and at the age of only 30, he died, surrounded by his loyal, admiring students and his four beloved adopted sons. In that short life, George Elwin Hogg had managed to achieve so much. His joyful perseverance and dedication brought him close to the hearts of the ordinary Chinese people. So what can we learn from this story, from this extraordinary man? To love and respect one's fellow human beings, regardless of race, belief, or cultural difference, to strive selflessly with compassion for a common positive humanitarian goal, one can achieve truly astonishing things, even in a short life. Tragically cut short. This month, we, a group of George's family, members of the Society for Anglo-Chinese Understanding, are making a most memorable visit to China to take part in the celebrations being held in Gansu commemorating the life of my uncle. We are following his footsteps from Shanghai to Shandan via Nanjing, Xi'an, Baoji, Shuangshipu, and Lanzhou. This journey vividly brings back memories of 37 years ago when in April 1988, I was in China representing George's family at a high profile series of events in memory of Rui Ali, who just died at the age of 90 in Beijing after spending 60 years in China. It became clear to me that in addition to the memory of Rui Ali, my uncle's memory was also being celebrated. Many times my uncle's name was mentioned, indeed included in those celebrations, and his epitaph was quoted on many an occasion. Through his being and working, many blades of grass will grow in places where none grew before. This epitaph stuck in my mind. While I was there, I was asked if I would be prepared to act the part of my uncle in a television series to be produced by Gansu Television. I readily agreed and returned later that year for 3 months of filming. My uncle's sister, Rosemary, gave me all her brother's letters and manuscripts, which I read avidly to get into the character I was about to play. And so, following this intense period of getting to know my uncle, I started to write his biography, Blades of Grass, which was finally published in 2017. Now it's been translated into Mandarin and published by the prestigious Renmin Publishing House in Beijing and launched at the London Book Fair just last month as part of the celebrations in the UK honouring my uncle's memory. And so now the biography is available to the Chinese-speaking people for them to, I hope, gain greater, more intimate understanding of their national hero. At the same time, at the London Book Fair, another translation of heroic stories was launched. That book by Andrew Hicks tells of a band of pacifist, conscientious objectors of the Friends Ambulance Unit, who, amongst other things, were running medical supplies into China in the 1940s. There are some amazing stories out there. There's also an astonishing number of heroes whose stories never get told.